and the portfolio committee, morning to the delegation of the Auditor General. You are all welcome to this meeting, to the interact with the issues that are on the agenda. We know that the members were engaged and all of us were engaged in a period of the elections, and welcome all of you members of the portfolio committee. We note that there's a load shedding, Mr. Mathonsi, that you must take note. We may have difficulties of other members who will in the course of our deliberation get out of our line, and I'm sure that goes to all the presenters that will be here. I think we must be noting that fact of the network challenges that we'll be facing. We're going to have a long program today, starting this morning and in the afternoon. And the agenda, as has been highlighted, Mr. Mathonsi, it will be important that we ground ourselves, focus on the time allocated, highlight key issues that the presenters and members will be focusing on, so that all of us, we contribute to the issues that are being raised and those that members will be raised. I will going to be a little bit strict on the time, so that we have satisfied ourselves in terms of the discussion that is going to be ensuing. Mr. Mathonsi, I want to request for your guidance in terms of the agenda, and I think because I see point number 7 and number 10, they are coming from the same department. I will, before we proceed, just to perhaps members may need to assist whether we can combine the two items and discussions or comments come after, so that we don't take long in terms of the deliberations and discussions. This is our agenda. Can I get guidance first from members in the proposal before we adopt and proceed with our agenda? Mr. Mathonsi, can I get guidance in terms of the proposal so that we manage time, but to allow more contributions from members?
Yes, from my side, I think that's a good suggestion, because I mean the audit action plan is also related to the audit outcome. So we can combine the two and then have one discussion.
Okay. Can I check with the three members? Can I check with the Honorable Mudise, Honorable Kanyile, and Honorable
Recording in progress.
Tito and Arul Farmerve, on whether the proposal satisfies our process. Honorable Mudise?
I'm satisfied, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honorable Kanyile?
She's just busy rejoining us, sir.
Honorable Tito?
Ms. Tito, she's not in the meeting today. She's sending an apology.
Honorable Ntwako?
I think I'm fine, Chair, as long as I'll be given time to you know, just to contribute. Yeah, greetings to everyone.
Honorable Van der Merwe?
Ms. Van der Merwe as well, she's not joining us. She said she's not joining us.
Okay, thank you, members. That satisfy and give us an authority, and that's an indication of adoption of the agenda as has been highlighted. Can we now move to item number 2?
Chair, I'm not sure if you noticed that I'm in the meeting as well.
Yeah, I was deliberate to identify members who,
sure,
who must give and I'm sure you have appreciated the approach I've taken.
Thank you. I have.
Okay. Thank you. Can I then go to introduction? Mr. Mathonsi, can you guide? We'll start with the AG, and then we'll come to Home Affairs. Auditor General.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning to the Honorable Members of the Committee and the colleagues from Home Affairs, GPW, and also IEC. I am Pumulani Rabonda. I will be leading the delegation from the Auditor General. With me, I am with Bonolo Moshe, who is the senior manager in charge of the Audit of Home Affairs. She has a team made up of Kaiseka, Rendani, Chamano, and Kosilan. I'm also accompanied by Morisi Mwekeza, who is the senior manager for the audit of GPW. I also have Angie Hose, who is the senior manager for the audit of IEC. She is accompanied by Christine van Zee. And then we also have Mponso Chauke from the IT audit division. That is the delegation from the Auditor General Chair. If I miss someone, apologies, my colleagues. Thank you very much.
Is on the delegation of the AG all recognized, as the Mr. Fumulani indicated, that if we have missed our colleague, you can identify your attendance. I mean, you can introduce yourself, sorry. Okay. Deputy Minister?
Thank you very much, Chair. I would firstly like to apologize for the minister. He has to attend to some cabinet committees. There are items that are coming from Home Affairs that he has to deal with. I will request the DG to introduce our entire staff and management complement. However, I would like to take this opportunity, Chair, to introduce the Commissioner and the Deputy Commissioner Operations for the Border Management Authority. It is quite an exciting period for us, since you know how far we have come with the issue of the Border Management Authority. I would like to therefore introduce Dr. Mike Masiapata, who is the Commissioner for the Border Management Authority, and request that they turn on their screen so that you can be able to see him. Dr. Mike, the Commissioner, and also Major General Chilembe, who is the Deputy Commissioner Operations. I'm hoping they will have turned on their screens by now so that we can be able to see them. But I will probably leave it there and then request the DG to introduce our entire staff complement that we have came with today. Thanks.
Thanks, DM, DG.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the DM and all the members that are in attendance. From the Department of Home Affairs, we joined by the CFO, Mr. Gordon Holambi, Mr. Tulani Mavuso, who's responsible for institutional planning and support, Mr. Thomas Sigama, responsible for civics. We have an apology from DDG Makay, who's attending to another matter, and then DDG HR, Mengidi Mwaboko, who's also joining us. And then I also have Advocate Muizi from Counter-Corruption and Security Services, also an apology from the CIO, but is represented by Mr. Sope. And then we also have Mr. Sile Mtiane, responsible for strategy, policy planning, and also M&E, and then Muzi Njokwe, who's currently assisting as parliamentary liaison officer in the ministry, and then CI Toza, minister spokesperson, and then I think it's Mudubi, if he's in attendance, myself, Kamduli, the chief of staff in the ministry, and then the commissioners, as earlier indicated, including the project manager, Mr. Jin. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, colleagues, DM. Thanks very much and welcome both the commissioner and the deputy commissioner. We hope that in the course of action, we'll interact with them. And thanks very much, both the Director General and Mr. Fumulani, for introducing the team. All of us as members of the portfolio committee were here We'll take apologies, Mr. Matonzi, from your side. And if there's any apology from, I think the DM has also already rendered the apology of the of minister. Mr. Matonzi? So, Brady, is there an apology?
Chairperson, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I was also saying that the GPW is here as well. If they can introduce themselves, I think also some few IEC members.
I thought Mr. Fumulan has introduced all the delegation that is going to present on their issues. As indicated, IEC and the GP government printing ones, unless I'm not, I was not listening, Mr. Matunz. Mr. Fumulan, no. I'm correct.
Sorry to correct you, Chair. I introduced the delegation from the AG who are auditing those institutions. I think Mr. Matunz is talking about the officials from those institutions now who need to be introduced.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Can we get IEC? IEC, who's here? Okay, Government Printing Works? Mr. Matunzi?
Yes, Chair.
I'm coming back to you because I'm trying to recognize the both institutions. They seem not to respond.
Okay.
Is your request still standing or not?
Chairperson?
Yes, Ms. Fosse.
My apologies. I was just struggling with the network to unmute myself, but we are in attendance. I'm not sure if I should go ahead through your permission.
Yes, proceed.
All right. Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. Good morning, Chairperson and members, colleagues. We are in attendance. All members of EXCO are here today. I want to introduce our new CFO who recently joined us, Mr. Ian van der Merwe. We have Ms. Michelle Modise, who's GMHR, Mr. Sitlian Gubani, who's the acting GM operations, Ms. Anela Plain, who's our CIO, and Ms. Constance Shibambo, who's our director internal audit. We've also invited chairperson of our audit committee, Dr. Tepo Mufuke, as well as Ms. Nkwanyam, who was seconded by National Treasury to assist with the audit for the year under review. All those members are actually joined now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, CEO, CEO, for introducing your team. Can I go back to IEC? If okay.
Good
Members, we have
good morning,
now. Yes.
I had been momentarily shut out. My name is Masego Shibura. I'm the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer with the IEC.
Okay. So you're alone, Mr. Shibura, if I may check?
The CAFO was meant to join me. I think she may be having difficulty connecting, but she will join.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Shibura, with your team, members. Let's now invite... Mr. Matunzi, there's any apology, Mr. Matunzi, before we proceed to another item?
Yes, Chairperson, there's an apology from Ms. Father Merve, and then also from Ms. Dito. Ms. Lefwache, she's indicated that no, she'll leave at 10 o'clock, she'll be back by 10:15. Yeah, she sent that apology, but she'll be in the meeting at the moment.
Okay.
Okay, Chair.
Thank you. All the apologies noted and accepted. Can I invite Mr. Fumulan to lead the item of the Auditor General? Mr. Fumulan, you will then direct, delegate in terms of how we need to approach, conscious to the time allocated for the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you for the time to engage with the committee. Wunolo Moshe is the one who's going to take us through the presentation, and yes, we'll be very much conscious of the time that will be allocated to us. Mine is only to do an introduction and while she's setting up the presentation on our side. Chair, ours is a constitutional mandate. We are here as part of the role that has been given to us to strengthen our country's democracy by strengthening and enabling oversight, accountability and governance in these public institutions that we audit. And we come here with the hope that as part of this engagement that we're having with the committee, the members of the committee, the public at large who receive these messages that we're sharing today, they will continue to find us to be a relevant Supreme Audit Institution that shares with the public and with those oversight bodies the relevant information that enables them to be able to hold the executive accountable and those who have been charged with the governance of the public sector institutions. We also have tried to also form our understanding of the portfolio committee so that the manner in which we share the message with yourselves, Chair, and the committee is in a manner that it empowers the committee with information that is going to help the committee with the work that you are doing, especially now with part of the budget review and reporting report that you need to develop. And as part of that, I just want to highlight just a few things on slide number three. In terms of National Assembly Rule number 227, there are two key things that link to what we're doing today, which is bullet number two there. It talks about portfolio committee may, among other things, perform the following functions. And there are just two that I want to highlight for purpose of today, which is maintain oversight of the portfolio of national executive authority, including implementation of the legislation. And bullet number four, which talks to monitor, investigate, inquire into, and make recommendations concerning any such executive organ of state, constitutional institution, and any other body or institution. So it is in this context that we give this information to the portfolio committee today about the audit outcome of the Home Affairs portfolio, including GPW and also IAC, to enable the committee to discharge those functions that have been highlighted in Rule 227. And going into slide number five, which will be my last slide before Bonolo comes in, I also want to highlight a few things here around what we also understand as the role of the oversight, especially the portfolio committee. And what I'm highlighting now links to what we recommend to be the issues that the portfolio committee needs to look into in response to the message that we're sharing today. It talks to holding the executive authority accountable for failures in control environments. So yes, part of the message, there may be errors where we're saying this area for improvement in here. So that's where it links to that one. Follow up on previous commitments made by accounting officers. You'll see the message talks to improvement in some areas and also stagnation in some areas where there are methods that need to be improved, talking to the commitments that were made previously. And determine if corrective steps are taken to address shortcomings in the internal control environment. And lastly, inquire what training and support is given to officials to enable them to correctly execute their responsibilities. So these are some of the functions that falls within the oversight responsibility of the portfolio committee to take cognizance of as you process the message that we'll be sharing today. Let me, through you, Chair, hand over to Bonolo Moshe to then take us through the rest of the presentation. And we'll then, after it's done, then be guided by yourself, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bonolo. Moshe, please take us through.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues and members. I'm Bonolo Moshe, and I'll be taking us through the rest of the slides. So today we'll be discussing the outcomes of the audits within the Home Affairs portfolio, made up of entities falling under the Minister of Home Affairs, DHN, GPW, and by virtue of the transfer of voted funds, the IEC, which falls under the chairperson of the commission. So the outcomes of the portfolio, Chair, have slightly improved from the previous year. So the main reason being IEC, which has improved from an unqualified with findings opinion to an unqualified with no findings, which is what we term the ideal audit opinion, which is a clean audit. And we commend the commission from obtaining a clean audit opinion after a long journey of being in the unqualified with findings category. However, the Department of Home Affairs has remained stagnant in the unqualified with findings category, and this has been the situation over the past 5 years. Government printing works is outstanding, as the 2021 financial statements have not yet been submitted for audit, and therefore the audit has not yet commenced. Moving on to the credibility of financial reporting. So what we can note there is that both DHA and IEC has consistently been able to submit financial statements within the legislated deadlines. We have noted an improvement in IEC, where in the current year they were able to submit financial statements that don't contain material errors, as compared to the previous year where the financial statements required material corrections on the area of related parties and risk management disclosures, of which in the current year they were able to address. With the Department of Home Affairs, for the current year and similar to the previous year, the financial statements that were submitted for audit contained material errors, which were subsequently corrected by management, and therefore an unqualified opinion was achieved on the area of the financial statements. So the areas that required material corrections is around the impairment of receivables and impairment of accrued departmental revenue. So all of this is due to the inconsistent and incorrect application of the adopted accounting policies, which has resulted to differences in what the auditor has estimated and recalculated versus what management has disclosed in their financial statements. And Chair, if you can recall, these issues are the same issues which we had raised in the previous year, and therefore we have concluded that the action plans were not effective enough to address the repeat audit findings. And then moving on to credible performance reporting, Chair, as with the previous year, there was a directive or a firm level decision taken at the AGSA that to focus on other risks that have been imposed on the audits by COVID, that the auditors will be looking at only one significant program of the institutions which we are auditing. And for the Department of Home Affairs, we have looked at the Citizen Affairs Program, which is Program 2. And for IEC, we have looked at the Electoral Operations Program, which is also Program 2. So the performance that we are discussing here is only limited to those programs which we have audited for the past 2 years. So in terms of the performance, Chair, we have noted a regression in the quality of the performance report submitted for audit, the main contributor being the department, where in the previous year, the performance report had no material errors, but in the current year, material errors were identified in terms of usefulness. And by that, the issues that were identified there is inconsistencies that were noted in the performance report. So an example that we can provide is the instance where the reported achievement is not consistent with the planned target. So the department planned for something else, but in the performance report that was submitted for audit, they reported on something different. And then with regards to IEC, there was a slight improvement in the performance report submitted for audit, because in the previous year, there were issues of reported achievements which were not aligned to the supporting documentation. But in the current year, there was only one issue that was identified, which relates to inconsistent reporting in the APR, similar to Home Affairs. So for both IEC and Home Affairs, all these issues that we have identified is mainly due to the review processes which did not pick up the errors. And however, it should be noted that management was able to correct these mistakes in the performance report. And then moving on to compliance with legislation. So the portfolio has, there's been an improvement in the area of compliance with legislation. as IEC had no material non-compliance reported in the current year, and hence the clean audit. For the Department of Home Affairs, however, there's a continued struggle with compliance with legislation, where material non-compliance was identified in the areas of material adjustments to the financial statements, which we have already discussed. And the other area of non-compliance is revenue management, where the department did not take effective steps to recover money due to the department. So this relates to the fines and penalties that is issued in terms of the Immigration Act. The department issues these fines and penalties at the ports of entry, but they are not able to do anything to ensure that these fines are paid over by the responsible officials to the department. So this is due to the lack of policy and procedure in place to guide the collection of fines and penalties. And then on the area of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. So on this slide, we analyze irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, which relates to the current year. And we've seen for the portfolio, a total of 19.6 million was incurred, with IEC dominating at 15.6 million and DHA at 4 million. So the reason for the irregular expenditure at IEC is due to contract extensions without obtaining the required National Treasury approvals, and also an instance where competitive bidding process was not followed for the procurement from established panels. And then it should be noted that all of this irregular expenditure was identified by management's internal processes, meaning that by the time that the financial statements were submitted for audit, management had already identified the non-compliance and disclosed the irregular expenditure accordingly. So the nature of irregular at IEC, majority of it was with regards to the ABIS contract, so payments relating to the ABIS contract. And then fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the total there is about 726,000, with DHA dominating at 557,000 and IEC at 169,000. So the main reason at DHA is the flight postponement of the deportation of Congolese nationals due to the department not having landing rights by the time that the flight was scheduled to take place, and therefore the flight had to be postponed. And for IEC, it's due to the tax directive on lump sum paid to SARS on behalf of ex-employees. And then zooming into the irregular expenditure of the portfolio over the 2 years, we can note there that there's been an improvement in the portfolio due to the irregular expenditure, which has reduced by 56% in the current year. The nature of the irregular we have already emphasized on, and the fact that majority of the irregular was already identified by management's internal processes. So looking at the previous year irregular expenditure that was reported for investigation, so we have found findings at the department for instances where the previous year irregular expenditure was not investigated as required by legislation. And then with fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there has been a regression in the fruitless and wasteful expenditure as the amount has significantly increased, although the amounts are significantly low when we compare them to the irregular expenditure amounts. We've already discussed the nature of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure which was incurred. And when we're looking at the previous year fruitless and wasteful that was reported for investigation, same as irregular expenditure, we found instances of fruitless and wasteful expenditure of the previous year, which was not investigated by the department. And then moving on to supply chain management. So there's been an improvement in SCM as there was no instance of material non-compliance identified in the current year. But there were, however, findings which were identified. And the common findings for Home Affairs is the employees doing business with the state and with regards to local content, where the specifications did not stipulate the minimum threshold for local content. So one finding at IEC is the issue of the competitive bidding process that was not followed when procuring from an established panel. And as highlighted earlier, management had already identified the non-compliance and reported on the irregular expenditure. So the recommendations that we have here is mainly to ensure that these issues that have been identified do not materialize into significant non-compliance, leading to a regression in the audit outcomes in the next financial year. So this will require strengthening of the preventative controls that have been put in place, and there's also a need to develop standard operating procedures and provide closer oversight around the procurement from panels at IEC. And then moving on to the status of internal controls, I think these are a reflection of the audit outcomes and the slides which we have already discussed. And for IEC, just to close on that gap to say, how is there a clean audit opinion, but there are internal control deficiencies which has been highlighted as of concern. So it's just to highlight that even though there were there was a clean audit, there were findings that were identified, or there were issues, or there's room for improvement, and particularly on the areas of policies and record keeping. And this relates to the processes around the procurement from established panels. The status of IT environment in the portfolio is of concern, and for the department, intervention is required for both for areas of IT governance and IT system controls. So for IT governance, some of the issues that we have identified, there is inconsistent application of controls at DHA and delays in approving the IT governance framework at IEC. Some of the issues that we have identified for IT system controls for DHA, the missing security updates, legacy systems with functionality limitations, unsupported software, and for IEC, security patches not deployed, lack of compliance with own approved policies, and a lack of segregation of duties on systems. So many of these issues that we have raised in the current year around IT governance, it's issues that are recurring from the previous year, and therefore there was minimal action taken to remediate prior year findings. So our recommendation there is that management should ensure that those action plans are adequately implemented and continuously monitored to ensure that these findings are addressed, and to protect the IT environment accordingly. And now, summarizing everything we have discussed, which is the portfolio snapshot, I think generally the portfolio is improving in terms of the audit outcomes. With the clean audit that we have noted at IEC, also taking into account that the audit of government printing works is outstanding, the unqualified financial statements that were noted for both IEC and DHA, and for DHA particularly, that they were able to correct material misstatements, and with performance information as well, the no findings that were reported, particularly because they were also able to correct the misstatements that were noted in the performance report, and the fact that no compliance, material compliance findings were noted for IEC, and the irregular expenditure which has reduced in the current year, which is showing an improvement over the two-year period. And then just to summarize the key root causes which have mostly contributed or prevented the department from crossing over is the inadequate review of compliance with laws and regulations. This speaks to the adjustments to the financial statements, and it also speaks to the revenue management, which was as a result of the lack of documented policies in place to guide the collections of the fines and penalties. Another root cause is the action plans, which did not effectively address the repeat audit findings, because most of the material findings that we have identified are recurring from the previous year. And also the reviews performed over the financial statements, which were not adequate to detect and correct material errors on the financial statements before the financial statements are submitted for audit. And the recommendations that we have there around these root causes is for the department to enhance the implemented compliance monitoring procedures and to review and monitor compliance with laws and regulations on a regular basis, to effectively develop policies and procedures for the collection of fines and penalties issued, and also for the design and diligent implementation of these action plans, which should be monitored to prevent the repeat audit findings. So those are some of the recommendations, Chair, that we have for the department. And we thought that we should give further recommendations to the portfolio committee in terms of areas which we believe that if the committee ventures into from a strategic point of view, it could assist the department in moving forward. And the first is around the policy improvement perspective, where I've already mentioned that one of the key root causes for the material non-compliance identified is the lack of policy in place to guide the department in collection of the fines and penalties. So the Immigration Act does not guide how the department should recover this money, but the department's own policy also does not cater for this. So offenders who have been issued with fines and penalties keep entering the country, which is placing a security risk to the country as well. So this is an area which we believe that the portfolio committee can venture into to assist the department. Another area is that the department is undergoing a modernization project. So some of the key projects in this regard have been met with significant delays and challenges. For example, the ABIS project, which is also crucial in the success of the Border Management Authority. So this contract has now been ceded, and we believe that should the portfolio committee provide more oversight there through strict and continuous monitoring of the key milestones in these projects, this could assist the department in moving forward in terms of the modernization project. Chair, I think that is the end of our presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Bonolo Moshwe, for your presentation on behalf of the Auditor General. Full fellow, is there any other addition, or you'll be comfortable after members have made comments?
No, no further additions, and then we'll just wait for comments and questions from the honorable members. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Colleagues, we're going to be allowing members to run with the comments or questions. We'll then get responses from the AG team, and we'll request IC to make comments, GBW to make comments. Then we'll ask the Director General on his delegation with his team, and the Deputy Minister. Then we then close up the item. So we're going to run in that manner, and we're not going to disrupt. The only disruption we're going to do is when I'm allocating time, when the video screen is up, is on, you need to work towards your closing of your comments or question. I will directly start with the request, Honorable Mulekwa, Honorable Mqini, Honorable Khanyile, Honorable Ruos, Honorable Pilei, Honorable Lokhwase, and Honorable Mutise to make comments. I'm not sure whether I've skipped any member, but if that, I'll be guided by yourself. Honorable Mulekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation from the Office of the Auditor General. And also appreciate the fact that at least there's a slightly improvement, especially from the side of the IEC. We hope that moving forward, there will be major improvement from all the department and its entities. Chairperson, I just want to check with the Office of the Auditor General, because on the issue of out of the presentation, the AG office mentioned that there is a challenge, especially in the monitoring of the action plan. So I just want to check if there is any regular meeting between the Office of the AG and the department to be able to monitor the implementation of the action plan. And is there any regular evaluation and monitoring on the progress from both parties, especially on the issue of the action plan? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for your question and comments, Honorable Mulekwa. Honorable Mqini.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Mine, Chair, is actually very simple, not long, really. As I've read the report a bit, I just wanted to check now what will the department do in terms of ensuring that the IT infrastructure is maintained, I think, proper, as now it has been uncovered by the HG now, which there might be a problem. In terms of the maintenance, and then also in terms of that's number one. Number two, I wanted to check in terms of they say that there's no policies in terms of the revenue Google collection. What will the department do in terms of ensuring that those policies are in place and the revenue that are due to the department are actually being collected proper? Those are my few questions at this point in time, Chair. Thanks. And you like to put me as the second person. I don't know why. Thanks. You like to disorganize me.
No, I was not aware, Honorable Mqini. Thank you very much that you are disorganized. I'm just facilitating the proceedings on your behalf. Honorable Khanyile? I know Honorable Khanyile indicated difficulties, and Honorable Ramulobe. Honorable Khanyile, let's try.
I am available, Chairperson.
Yes, proceed.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Chairperson, we acknowledge the presentation from the AG, and also I would like to commend the IEC on their status that they're currently standing on unqualified without findings, of course. And also, we note the recommendation to the Portfolio Committee, Chairperson. I think going forward, we need to include it in our management meeting so that as a committee, we can discuss how we are going to assist the department, because there is a recommendation that is directed to us with regard to the policy improvement, where they have stated that there's lack of policy in place in terms of collecting money. And the department also doesn't have a policy to cover this. I think we need to actually assist. And the other one that speaks to provide oversight through strict monitoring in the Department of Home Affairs modernization. And another thing that I was not aware of, I think going forward as a Portfolio Committee Chairperson, we will need to make sure that the department actually on their performance, they report on the target that they have planned for, because according to the AG's report, they have found out that the department, when they report on their performance most of the time, they report on the target that they have not planned for. So So I think as a portfolio committee, those are things that we need to look at, and we truly appreciate the report. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyele, for your contributions. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the AG, and greetings to the DHA leadership and colleagues. To the AG, you highlight that similar concerns from previous years don't appear to be resolved. And you go on to recommend that there must be timely consequences for officials who do not implement action plans or neglect their duties, and that the consequence management should be enforced in the portfolio. And I think we all need to realize, colleagues, that that these audits, they're also a reflection on us and our oversight, and that this is happening under our watch. Now, AG, I just want to get clarity on what these consequences should be. And I've got four specific questions. So firstly, you know, we as a committee, we've asked for the audit action plan last financial year. On several occasions, we've asked for the department to come and report back on these audit action plans. And clearly, it's not quite working. What else can we do to ensure compliance with these audit action plans? What are your recommendations in that regard? Then secondly, we note that you state that some of the entities in specific are not responding to requests for information. There are misstatements, repeated misstatements, not submitting financial statements year after year. And you've also highlighted grave concerns about IT governance and system controls for years on end as a high risk. And we saw that the GPW in the last year lost audit data, which created a big problem as a result of this IT misgovernance. So my understanding is that an official is guilty of financial misconduct if they willfully or negligently fail to exercise a power or perform a duty delegated by the accounting officer in terms of the PFMA. So is this your understanding in this case where there is this negligence? What are the sanctions for such misconduct, and who is specifically accountable in this case? Then on the supply chain findings, and I think this is quite a concern as well, the continuation of employees doing business with the state. Now, we had a DPSA briefing to the Committee of Public Service and Administration in September 2020, they said that this kind of employees doing business with the state requires disciplinary action if it's proven to be true, but it's also a criminal act that requires law enforcement intervention. Is this your understanding, that employees doing business with the state in the DHA and its entities should be facing disciplinary and criminal action? And who is responsible for taking that action? And to what extent do you see this happening in the Department of Home Affairs and its entities? And then finally, I know last year we spoke about the misstatements and some challenges that perhaps certain officials were having in understanding the IFRS reporting requirements, etc. And so everybody said, okay, give them a chance, let them go again. And my final question is, what is the reasonable time frame for audit findings to be addressed, for these kinds of training issues to be addressed? Is it 1 year? Should it be done in 1 year, or is it 2 years? What is a reasonable time frame to say, okay, you've had enough time now, and now action needs to be taken? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ross, for your contributions. Honorable Pile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also just welcome and appreciate the report. And I must say that any improvement is good improvement. So even though there has been slight improvements overall in terms of the portfolio committee or the departments, it must be appreciated. I think we also need to applaud the IEC, where it's changed from findings to no findings, because that obviously shows that there has been that they've addressed the previous report in terms of the findings that was there. I think mine is just a concern about the GPW and the outstanding financials, because I think that we can't continue going through this in terms of not having an audit conducted. And I hope that this can be speeded up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pile. Honorable Lokhote.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me follow through on what my colleagues have already mentioned, that we applaud the improvements made both by the department and mostly by the IEC. I do not have much questions, Chair, but there are two or three questions that I want to raise, and the response will come from the department as it was touched by the Auditor General on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. One question will be that I need to get clarity on the cancellation of the flight that was booked for the deportation of Congolese, and maybe clarity on what the department have done after finding out that some of the staff members did not show for the flight and accommodation that was close or around about 63,000 rands that were booked for them. And also, do they have a plan to improve their reports relating to financial and performance information as it was suggested by the Auditor General? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much for your contributions, Honorable Lokwase, Honorable Modise.
Thank you so much, Chair. I think members would have expressed their appreciation and we note the improvements on the department and the IEC, particularly around the irregular expenditures. Whilst we appreciate the improvements, Chair, one needs to also emphasize on the concern regarding the recurring issues with no implementations. I think most of these issues we would have dealt with in the previous reports, and clearly there's lack of implementation and thereof. And I think it's time that we also stressed that individuals who are responsible must be held accountable. These are the issues that we cannot forever be engaged on and have recommendations and action plans that lack implementation. Therefore, the department must really look into measures of holding these individuals accountable. It is really concerning also that the DPW failed to make their submissions. I think we need also as a committee to be furbished with the reasons thereof why they have not been able to meet that requirement. So we cannot just note it as they have not made submissions, but we need to know the reasons behind that on why or what are the difficulties thereof that are posing challenges to them so that there can be interventions that can be made if there's a need. I have a question also with the AG to check with them if they have embarked on a process of auditing the missions that are outside of the country. We need to emphasize more, Chair, on the focus of implementations of action plans. I know that members would have highlighted that, but to avoid the repeats of negative audit findings, the department really needs to strengthen their measures in dealing with implementations of action plans. It will assist greatly on improving on our performance. I think, Chair, but overall we appreciate the AG's report, and we are delighted that there are slight movements. At least on the side of the departments, we can see that more efforts are being put to make changes and to make sure that they do get things right. But there's a lot that still needs to be done, and for our own oversight as well, we need to make sure that we guard against the repeats of such actions that are not taking us far. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Modise, for your contributions, and all members. I'm sure the AG has taken note of comments and questions and the appreciation therefore on the improvement in some of our institutions and the weaknesses which were identified to that extent. What will also assist is for the AG just briefly to bring us on board in terms of their scope of audits, particularly at the Department of Home Affairs, more interest, the portfolio committee had engaged at a particular time on the area of permits that are issued to the mining area, if I may put it like that, were to interact with the process that the head of anti-corrupt unit in the department presented the detailed report in terms of the areas of concern from that unit and the intervention that they are implementing. I want just to get a sense from the AG whether they did venture around that area. And also just to give an overall assessment of the civil and immigration in terms of the implementation of previous recommendations that they were carrying. And those recurring issues, what are the identified obstacles? And I'm sure the DM, the DG, will able to come closer to these issues. The last point is whether the a process of interfacing with the Lindela Institution, whether the AG had went to that extent. You remember that in the period of the year, there were incidents that happened, and that might have contributed or compromised the financial status of the department, as you have alerted in your comment around the deportation of the people. We need to get a sense of certainty around the difficulties of government printing works, the interaction between the AG and government printing works, including the audit committee, whether it's functioning at government printing works, so that we're able to venture as members are raising that we must concentrate or ground our focus around that financial or the government governance area of the government printing works. I think we take appreciation on the continuous work of IEC, the improvement, and I think give comfort in terms of the institution that Home Affairs is overseeing. I'm going to invite the AG team, Mr. Fulfelo, to and your team on your delegation to give responses and comments. And then we'll then have comments on the IEC and gun printing works and the DM and the DG and the delegation. Fulfelo?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you to the honorable members of the committee for all the kind words around the acknowledgement of the message that we're sharing, and also for the comments and the questions. This only helps us to improve the relevance of our messages. Bunola is going to help us with the questions from the question from Honorable McLean, especially on the IT, what should need to be done around IT issues. She will also assist with the question on from Honorable Modise around the audit that we do on the foreign missions. She will also address three questions coming from the Honorable Chair, the grounding on the scope of the audit, especially with related to the payments for many areas. She will give us an overall assessment of the civil immigration address. The civil and immigration, whether it addresses the issues that have been reported before, and also should give us a status around the Lindela. Honorable Chair, let me start by, well, when only preparing herself to respond to those questions, I will then look into the others. Let me start by saying, with regard to Home Affairs, the appointment of full-time Director General is a very good step in the right direction. You will remember that the previous time when we came here, I think for the previous 2 years when we came to the committee, we were reporting on the performance of the department, or the outcome of the department, which were under 18 data generals. And we know it's a common cause that it's not an ideal space to be for a department of this nature, for a department like Home Affairs, to be operating under 18 capacity. Now, the fact that there's a permanent DG, it helps a lot, because you then have a permanent person who is going to drive that tone at the top. And our view of what we have learned of the DG through information that we have had with him is that he is already working on driving the right tone at the top. It's only through the real return of the top, a tone of crisis management, a tone of agency in dealing with matters that recurring issues can be addressed. Someone who acknowledges the audit message, someone who is interested in understanding in detail what is really the audit issue that have been highlighted so that they can be addressed. And that is what we have found of the DG, and we are only hoping that he will continue in that regard, because it's only through that process that he is going to be able to address these recurring issues. We also, on the questions and more questions that we asked, we're talking to the what needs to be done, especially around consequence management. I think Honorable Rose spent a bit of time on the issues of consequence management and what should be the appropriate sanction. The key thing is to follow what the process says in terms of the legislation. PFMA talks to if there's a transgression, if there's misconduct, if there is an element of negligence, investigate that particular matter. Let the outcome of the investigation tell you what needs to be done. And that's where we'll then be able to, by investigating it, we'll be also be passing a message to say such issues will not be tolerated in this space. And also outcome coming from the investigation will also be saying, we don't just investigate for the sake of investigating, but we investigate so that we can be able to implement remedial action based on the outcome of that investigation. So specifically in terms of what type of sanctions that need to be implemented, Honorable Ross, all we can say is that let appropriate investigations be implemented. By appropriate investigation, we talk about an investigation that is done at the right level, addressing the right scope in terms of what is wrong, and also be done by a properly qualified person so that the outcome of the investigation can really be subject to a challenge and they can be implemented together with the recommended remedial action in there. Honorable Greeny talked spoke to what needs to be done around revenue to be able to collect revenue. You know, the issue of the department's failure to collect the fines and penalties that has been issued, it's a symptom. The big core issue is that you have a legislation that is being contravened. And those who are contravening the legislation, there is not a penalty enough that is going to be a deterrent for them to stop contravening. So you've got people who are, referred to them as the offenders, who are contravening the Immigration Act, coming into the country illegally or without adhering to the laws of the country. They get fined, but those people, there's no way of following up with them again. So like Unolo said, it's a policy issue that in this day, as the department, as the cabinet, as the also parliament, what is it that needs to be done to ensure that there is appropriate measures to ensure deterrent for those who contravene the Immigration Act, to ensure that our immigration laws, they remain credible, and this integrity around that that system. So I think the issue of collection then becomes secondary to say, now that we've established what is really wrong, why are we, and what is the real deterrent that we need to implement, then what then we follow the what systems need to be put in place to ensure that if the deterrent is a fine, that fine needs to be paid. Honorable Chair, I need to mention that when we briefed the minister around the particular matter, he was very appreciative of the message as well. And he noted that in his own words, he said it's a useless fine because a fine that gets issued and you can't really collect. And he did indicate that a commitment that he gave is this is an area that needs to be looked at. And I think the committee then needs to support the minister around that space. The minister, what is it that you need to do around that space, and how can the committee continue to monitor that space? The first question from Honorable Mlek was talking about the concern around action plans that are not being implemented. Are there regular interactions between the department and also the AG? And the answer is yes. So Wunolo and our team, they do have regular engagements with the CFO. We do have a planned engagement that happened with the DG during the audits. And those engagements are used to first and make the management understand our recommendations and also get from them what are they doing about this thing. And like I said earlier on, the tone that we are experiencing coming from the DG now is that he is appreciative of this message, he has acknowledged the message, and something is being done. We are only hoping that it will be, there will be consistency in him implementing those particular action plans that we put together. I think one of the issues there was around training, because we have, over the past 2 years, we've highlighted the issue of skills, specifically around the modified case standard. And just to all emphasize there that there is no university in South Africa that gives a degree in public finance and in a part of accounting degrees. So the financial reporting standard that is used in public service, GRAP, and also modified case standard, they are not learned in university. In university, we learn international financial reporting standards. We come in public service, we have to learn the modified case standard and the GRAP, which is the standard that are applied at the Home Affairs and IEC respectively. It therefore means that even at the department side, when they're appointing people, when there are people who are supposed to be the ones preparing financial records, there is a deliberate effort to put together the learning plan for those people to ensure that on a regular basis, first, they go and learn MCS. Secondly, there is a regular and continuous update of their knowledge around the MCS. National Treasury has got a program that they do around this space. The National School of Government have got programs that they do around this space. And that's what we recommend, to say, get in touch with those role players, let them assist. I need to emphasize that while we note the issue of skills at Home Affairs around financial reporting, we did need to also emphasize the improvement that we've noted. That last year, around the issue of impairments, we had a concern that there was no complaint with the standard, specifically with regard to there was no model that was used to calculate the impairment. This year, we saw an improvement that there was a model. And when we look at the model, it was compliant with the standards, which means the management and the financial staff, they implement the recommendations. However, the gap was that model that was put together, the implementation of it now you're taking the model and you go and you calculate the numbers. That was the challenge. So it's progress, it's just too slow progress, but we're hoping that in the next financial cycle, that progress will have been fast-tracked to ensure that these report issues are closed. Lastly, Chair, I think the last point from Honorable Rose around the continuation of employees doing business with the state. So just to emphasize, what we got from Home Affairs was a 5,000 rand transaction where employees of other business organs of state did business with Home Affairs. So that's what we recommend, that Home Affairs must investigate who are those people, what went wrong, and then implement a remedial action. However, we need to highlight that it's not a lot of money, it's only 5,000 rand, but it's an area that the investment needs to also alert if there are any weakness in the control so that tap is closed before it becomes a big issue. So I think in this space, Honorable Ross won't be able to recommend the function, but to say such instances, we just need to be investigated to see what's really happening. Let me then hand over to Khalid to help us with the questions that I have. Before I hand over to Khalid, I've almost forgot the question from the Honorable Chair on GPW. Honorable Chair, the GPW audit was not an easy one. We closed the audit only at the beginning of 2021. So the audit of the financial statement for the financial year ended 31 March 2020 last year. We only finalized it at the end of, at the beginning of this year. We noted both ourselves, management, and also the audit committee, that it was not a smooth audit. We committed to do debriefs to fully understand what really went wrong in that particular audit. It was an audit that was full of pushbacks. I think almost every material finding was rejected, to a point where I think our report that we gave in November, that in 2020 to management, they rejected it. I think that they would reject the report. We then needed to engage in processes that needed to come to a point where we can close the audit in January 2021. We have since had the debrief with management led by the CEO, where we went through the process again, the findings that we have identified, and got management to understand where we are coming from and so that they, when they go back to their books and their records to try and address the issues that we have found, they have an appreciation of what has the real root cause of the findings. We did commit that we will continuously do that, have a regular meeting with them. Muresi, who's part of the team, who's part of the call here, she is the one who's having meetings or engagements with the management, the CEO and the CFO at GPW, to ensure that whatever they need from us in terms of guidance, we are available to provide that. But there's not a lot of effort from now, because we're still waiting for the financial document to be submitted once the GPW is ready. We have also been notified that the chairperson of the DRU committee has reached out to my land manager, where he wants an engagement that the sole purpose of it is to debrief and try to improve the audit process, because he has acknowledged the challenge that we experienced previously, and they need to be improved in that regard. So to answer your question, Chair, it was not a smooth audit process. We have concerns around it, and between management and also the audit committee, we're trying to find ways of how best can we improve this particular audit process. Thank you, Chair. Let me then hand over to Bunolo to help us with the other questions.
Just before the, just before Bunolo fulfill, I think members of the committee will want to appreciate the, to understand what I'm trying to say. When you said you have not smooth with the government printing works, because I think this brief, after here, we need to venture in that space, as all members have raised concerns. So you need to come closer to the members. I'm sure they will also themselves, at a particular space, give us a reason. But we'll want, because your opinion will assist us to crack in some of the issues that seem to be more difficult for the AG to find comfort on the issues of government printing works. Maybe in just two lines, what is exactly the difficulties with this with the government printing works audit process? I'm raising this because we have a reason why we're asking this question.
Okay. At a technical level, Honorable Chair, is that the financial statement that we audited, or that were given to us in July, I think, no, 3 August 2020, they had a lot of material misstatements. They were not supported by underlying records. So, for example, you will have a number sitting in the financial statements under property, plant and equipment. When you then said, give me the asset register that reconciled to that number, you don't have that. You get a certain result that is giving a different number. It was just one of the examples of an issue that we experienced. There were multiple requests to change the financial statements. There were multiple requests to submit different information. For example, when send requests for information to for supporting documents or supporting schedules, we got one, we said this is wrong, then there is need to be, they need to go back and reconstruct another one. There were also, so that's at the technical level. And then at the process level, there were a lot of pushbacks. So a lady by the name of Rufu Nombadi, she was the senior manager doing the audit. When management was not happy with the funding that she was reported, they got escalated to me. I dealt with the escalation, the challenges that management was, the CEO was rejecting at the time. My outcome of the process, my review of the work was rejected. And then the CEO then went on to escalate again to my land manager at the time, was a corporate executive. She sat down with the corporate executive, with the management team of GPW, to go through which findings do you reject, and listened to them, got the evidence, and she came out with a report to say, this is our conclusion. That was rejected by management, and then it was escalated to a person by the time was a person of a national leader in the office, who then said, with all this process that have been done before the escalations, she then took a task, our quality control unit, a unit that is independent of the audit process, to review the audit file. in consideration of all the information that management has put together, saying this is what the basis of their rejection of the audit report. And that particular report, and that particular unit gave a report that was in support of the audit outcome. It did highlight a few areas which needed, which was to do with the documentation of the issues. But in principle, all the qualification paragraphs that were put in the audit report were supported. That again was did not find favor with the CEO and management. And we then ended up closing the audit file with a disclaimer of audit report, audit opinion, because the CEO did not give us a management representative letter as she was still challenging the audit outcome. So I hope with that, Chair, I've kind of brought the committee to, honestly, to what is it that we have experienced. And I think the engagement that we need to have with the audit committee chairperson is very important, because we need to really get to the bottom of what is really supporting the pushback, the rejection of the findings, instead of saying what is really the finding, what can we do to fix the underlying records, because rejecting the finding itself does not help fix the financial statements. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. I think we have given a framework of the questions we're asking you. Mr. Bonolo?
Thank you, Chair. So I'll start with the questions around the auditing of the foreign missions. So we have been able to audit the missions which we are required to audit in terms of the methodology. We have, however, not been able to physically go and audit the missions at the various foreign missions in the foreign countries. However, we performed alternative procedures where we were virtually auditing the foreign missions with the assistance of the DHA officials. So we didn't have any limitations there in terms of us not being able to conclude or audit any missions that we were required to. We obviously didn't audit all missions, as the methodology does not require us to audit all missions, but whatever they had to cover in terms of our processes, we were able to cover. The findings that we have noted at these foreign missions, none of them were resulted to material findings. One of the findings that we have found, which is at almost at some of the locations, is with regards to the missing visa labels. So it's a situation where we check the visa labels that have been issued and the visa labels that are remaining, and we found that there's a gap. So in that case, there could be an instance where there was a mistake that was done and the visa becomes cancelled, or the visa labels becomes cancelled, which is then required to be, the cancelled visa is required to be recorded to make sure that we have the confidence that the visa was not issued either illegally, or the money that relates to that visa where applicable has been has not been stolen and so forth. So the findings that we identified, they are really immaterial findings in terms of rent value, and what did not materialize into any material misstatement in terms of the audit. But however, we believe that the e-visa system, which the department is rolling out, will mitigate some of the issues that the department has encountered in terms of the services which are being rendered by the department in the foreign missions. So that's the first part. And the area around the scoping of the audit around the permits. So Chair, the permit indicators are lying in the immigration program of the department, which is program 3, of which we did not cover the immigration program in the 2021 audit cycle. As I had indicated, that we had to select one program, and that was the case with the two previous financial years. However, it is an area that we can look at, obviously guided by the decisions that are made at firm levels, considering the request that comes from the committee. And I think management had also raised a concern to say that it seems there's a neglection in terms of the other programs which we do not audit, being the immigration and the administration program. So the administration program hosts most of these modernization projects, whether it's systems that are being developed and so forth. So it can be an area which we consider scoping into the 2022 audit financial year. However, I think we have maintained that whatever controls that the department has in place around the citizen program, which we have audited, of which in the previous year, there were no material issues that were noted in the citizenship program. We have kept highlighting to management to make sure that whatever controls are being implemented in the citizenship program must also be maintained and implemented in the immigration program, so that by the time that we scope in these other two programs, we don't come out with material issues where the department has known that we will not be looking at those programs. So that's as far as immigration, the performance around immigration and the area of permitting is involved. We did not scope in that program. And then in terms of the civics, the performance around the civics, Chair. So the civics is the program that we have looked at. And so in this case, there was nothing to be done by the department. So there was no action to be implemented by the department because there were no material issues that were noted around the civics program in the previous financial year. However, in the current financial year, what we can recommend to management, because the issues that were identified were really not issues that were complex and so forth. It's just a matter of, you know, a review that is done on the annual performance report could have picked up the issues, the consistency issues that were noted. So it's not to say that they intentionally or they consistently report on what they should not be reporting on. I think through the quarterly reports, the department has been reporting correctly, but when it came to the final report, yeah, there was a mishap there which the review processes did not pick up. And I think just from an operation point of view, our observation with the civics program is that based on what has been scoped in the audit to the recording in terms progress. Of the civics program. And then in terms of the Lindela facility, so Chair, our scope for the current year in terms of Lindela was focusing on the seeding of the contract. As you can remember that the previous supplier, which was Bosasa, was being liquidated and were not able to render the services as required by the department. So the contract was then ceded to another service provider. And what we focused on is, number one, whether the contractual terms and arrangements of the now ceded contract, is that consistent to the original contract, to make sure that the department is not being overcharged for things that were not necessarily in the original contract or for which they never had a variation for. And so we didn't find any issues as far as the seeding was concerned. We could conclude on this based on the technical consultations and the legal consultations, which we did from our part to make sure that there has been compliance in this area. The other issue that came about in the current financial year is the department was venturing into purchasing the Lindela facility through the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. You know, the necessary payments were made to the Department of Public Works, and the Department of Public Works made all the necessary payments to the auctioneers. However, there's a pending court case that is currently taking place, I think, between the owners of SASA and the auctioneers, and therefore the Department of Public Works. And this has prevented the department from taking full ownership of the Lindela facility. So then that has resulted in the current contract with the supplier to be extended until such a time that the court ruling has been resolved. So as far as our audit scope had been concerned, the latest that we had, there might have been improvements, but there was an the court ruled against the purchase or the whole transaction. However, there was an appeal process that is still in progress, and therefore the department is unable to take full ownership of the property. And I think, Chair, that is as far as our focus areas is concerned in terms of the Lindela facility. I think those were the questions that we needed to address, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonolo and Fulfelo, for your response comments on the issues raised. We'll invite comments from IEC and the GBW and the DG's delegation and the DM, and then we'll attempt to make to summarize the item. I know we're going to receive annual reports on both Home Affairs and GBW later on. IEC, Mr. Shiburi. Comments?
Thank you, Chair, and members of the Portfolio Committee. We are scheduled to interact with the committee at the later stage, so we will reserve our comments for then, except just to mention the two things. One, that we acknowledge the role of the committee, the role of the Auditor General. We are thankful to the members of the Commission, the CEO, the Chief Electoral Officer, the CFO, and all the staff of the Electoral Commission for the audit outcomes that we have recorded. We think that for us, it is exceedingly important that we strive continuously to attain a clean audit, because that augurs well and helps to engender trust in state institutions, including constitutional bodies. As I said, Chair, we will interact fully with the AG report when we are scheduled to appear before the committee. And at that point, we'll also deal with one of the questions that arose as it relates to our IT legacy systems and the disaggregation of roles in those systems. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll just hand over to the Chief Financial Officer to see if she has any specific things she may wish to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shiburi, CFO.
Through you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, let me park my comments for the detailed presentation when we do appear in front of the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CFO, and Mr. Shiburi, for your appreciation of the areas of comments made by members. Government Printing Works, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I need to appreciate the opportunity that has been given to us to actually respond. I have two comments from Honorable Modise as well as the Chairperson to respond to. And the question relates to our failure to submit the annual financial statements and what difficulties are we experiencing, or did we experience with regards to that submission. Honourable members, Chairperson, Honourable Deputy Minister and colleagues, I just want to put it on the record that
On the 4th of February 2021, DPW experienced a power surge. And that power surge affected what we call the EVA hardware. And that particular hardware hosted critical servers, mainly containing important financial data, as well as operations information on the e-gazettes. And as a result, when the system failed, we lost that critical data. Efforts were put in place to ensure that we recover that data, as well as alongside to that recovery, to start rebuilding our financial data in view of the fact that we may not be able to recover all the data based on the evidence because we had hired companies to assist us with the data recovery process. And when we realized that we were not particularly winning in that regard, a decision was taken to run a parallel process where GPW had to then start the process of rebuilding its own financial data and started populating all the streams within finance to make sure that we again repopulated with the data using our own source documents internally. And that particularly focused on all the financial areas, the trial balance, the GLs, assets, inventories, creditors, debtors, and the overall operations to ensure that at least we move towards tabling our annual financial statements by May 2022. We have basically put two project plans in place, and I think we'll talk to this later on to help us achieve their objectives. I need to mention, Chairperson, in line with your comment as well, that GPW fully acknowledges and respects the role of AGSA as well as other oversight entities. And to that effect, we have indeed been interacting. Our relationship has been functional in a manner that we've been engaging with AGSA as well as the audit committee to make sure that we make headway, particularly in terms of the audit matters, with a view of strengthening our internal controls as well as improving overall governance within GPW. AGSA has particularly been invited to form part of our journey in rebuilding our financial data. And really, without compromising their independence, they've been requested to just advise in line with the relevant standards, you know, on areas of concern which they would identify during this process. So Ms. Moresi Mogeza, I've met with her together with the CFO as well as the other members of internal audit to make sure that at least she's fully aware. We've briefed her. I've engaged the BE as well as the DBE in this regard. And we wrote officially to all these entities, you know, the minister, we wrote to AGSA, we wrote to OAG, National Treasury, to actually indicate our plight to them and requested an extension for submission at a later stage whilst we're rebuilding our data. And we have received cooperation from AGSA. You know, we particularly engage from time to time with Ms. Mogeza in this regard so that in line with the relevant standards, she can begin to point us to the right direction. And we should be able to move towards getting an audit process concluded as soon as we indicate our state of readiness, because we have agreed with her in meetings that as soon as we are ready, will indicate so that she can come and assist us. The audit committee meetings have been held as scheduled. The chairperson of the audit committee is actually connected now with us. So our relationship with both the risk as well as the audit committee has been good because they've been really pointing us to the right direction in terms of where we need to make improvements. We believe that all this effort will really facilitate the audit processes that we'd want to have, because at least by the end of this rebuilding process, they would have a fair audit idea of the actions that we've taken to rebuild our finance data and be able to advise us accordingly. So it is important that we continue to engage. But in response to what Mr. Rabonda has indicated, indeed, we acknowledge as well that it hasn't been a fair and good process, but we have made inroads. And with the process that I've mentioned, we are of the view that we should be able to meet our targets in future of tabling credible financial statements in time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CEO Fosi. DG, if there's comments.
Maybe just on one, Chair, thank you so much. And
good morning to the team from the AG. We truly appreciate the work that they do. Maybe just one on the Congolese fruitless and wasteful expenditure. This matter from our side, we have referred it to the Loss Control Committee, as it is required, Chair, by the Treasury framework. This Loss Control Committee, I think, is scheduled to sit tomorrow to conclude on this matter. But upfront, I'd like to indicate, Chair, that from our own investigation, we have not been able to pick up any neglect from any of the officials that were handling this matter. If you are familiar with the process in terms of booking these flights, the payment is normally demanded. It's part of this transversal contract with Treasury. So you normally will pay upfront for any service that's required. And therefore, we now are looking at what is it that we can do from our side to either get or claw back the money that we paid to this service provider. Our understanding was that they were the ones that were supposed to obtain the lending rights. So we're also looking at that transversal contract to determine the liability for obtaining such lending rights, because it can't be that you are paying for a service and then you're expected to also seek lending rights in a counter of lending. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Deputy Minister?
No, thank you very much, Chair. And firstly, that one just appreciate the work that has been done by the Auditor General. Indeed, they serve as a guiding light for us to improve our financial performance. And that is why we always at all times seek to improve on what we have done. In as much as we have not moved from an audit opinion without to a clean audit opinion. However, we do know that there has been some areas of progress, for instance, on the reduction of the irregular expenditure by about 56%. I think that is good news, and we are happy that we have came to some sort of a resolution around the issue of contingent liabilities and the system that there are going to deal with the issue of the audit action plan when we present the payment report with the committee on what to deal with the issue that have been raised. But all in all, we are happy with the report that we have received, and we commit to make sure that we exercise oversight and we management. Thank you very much. On the last issue, I think that the DG dealt with it, that the what resulted into that fruitless and wasteful expenditure is a situation where we had to book a flight in order to deport some of the illegal immigrants. And our perception was that when you book the flight, the company that you are booking with is responsible for sourcing lending rights for that particular plane, which in this case, that did not happen. And as a result, we could not get value for money out of the payments that we had already done from them. This is not a contract that was administered by Home Affairs, but it is one of those transversal contracts. But we are taking action to see what remedy do we have. And also, as the DG has explained, that we have referred the issue to the loss committee of the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, for your comment, and all members, the DG, the CEO, and welcome a new CFO of Government Printing Works. I'm sure you have, CFO, you have taken note of the issues raised by members and the Auditor General. The IEC, Mr. Shiburi, and the CFO, thanks for your comment and appreciation to brief the committee at the time of your schedule. And full fellow, the AG leader, and Bonolo, and your entire members of the team. We're going to make sure that members, we take recommendations as outlined by the Auditor General in relation to the all the institutions which were represented by the report, but also venturing on the government printing works. We'll take interest, Deputy Minister, around the status governance of government printing works. We as the members of the committee will not allow that institution to run in the manner the AG has reflected. And I think you as the leader of the delegation, you may need to come closer to that process, and will take interest on the recommendations that have been highlighted by the AG. You know, Deputy Minister, that the various teams that have been grounded at government printing works to investigate this matter or the other in relation to the governance of the that institution. And it will employ you and the Minister to fast track, because what the AG raises on some of the areas link to what terms of reference of the process of the investigation that has been appointed by the minister in that area. We'll not leave this matter unattended. We may need also to appreciate the AG. We'll employ on the interacting with COPA to interface with the government printing work, so that we exert our oversight work, so that we understand the status of the financial and the governance and the factors that contribute to what the Auditor General has raised with the members, coupling with the issues that the members have raised as a consent to the issues that are referred to that. On the programs that the AG could not, and I think they are committing that they will look at in terms of their scope of focus in their next audit process, we'll appreciate that you venture in that area, so that we get a sense of the progress in terms of the reports that we've been receiving from the department, and also identify the weaknesses that are there. The immigration, I think it will be quite important now that we are grounded in the border management authority teams. You have noted the appointment of the commissioner and the deputy commissioner. So it's important that your scope might, to the extent, get into your project work of the border management authority, in line with some of the issues that we've highlighted in the immigration area. I think most of the issues that we'll take up as the as we conduct our oversight work with the department, when they are presenting their annual reports and when they brief the committee on some of the programs that the committee could have requested. On that note, members, we'll then close on the matter of the presentation and the comments, appreciating all of you commented on this item of the Auditor General. Thank you very much. I will invite the Deputy Minister to introduce the two reports or delegate, so that we're getting a brief and members will interface with the reports. And I'm sure in some of the in the reports, there will be areas that are emerging given the Auditor General's report. Deputy Minister.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. We are here to present the Department of Home Affairs Annual Performance Report. I'm not sure if, but you will correct me. I thought the one for government printing works is also ready. You are going to present it, but I thought it was scheduled for the 1600-hour meeting, which is the second session of this session. But just briefly to take you through the DHA Annual Performance Report before I hand over to the Director General, who is going to take us through the specific, is that in terms of overall performance, we have achieved 68% of our targets. They are divided into three sectors, which is admin, The administration has achieved 75% of their targets, which is three targets that have not been achieved out of nine. And Civic, which has been our best performer, achieved 83% of their targets, with only one target not being achieved, which has to do more with legislation. Immigration managed to achieve five out of their five targets, which meant that immigration is sitting at 50%. Now, you will notice that the worst performing was immigration, and that is largely attributed to two issues. Is the fact that we had to close borders at some point, and as a result, it meant some of the targets that we would have loved to achieve, we could not achieve. The issue of halting of international travel, which meant less operations being carried out by the immigration unit, also greatly affected the performance of the unit. But I will, however, then hand over, request that through you, Chair, that we hand over to the DG to then take us through all the details in terms of the presentation that we have prepared for today. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, thanks, GM. You're correct. The government printing works is scheduled in the afternoon for their presentation. Thank you. DG, in that manner, we agreed that the two reports must be presented, and then we then deal with the comments, questions after we have presented the two reports. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Deputy Minister and also the Honourable members in attendance. I think earlier on, DM, you had requested the two commissioners to make an appearance. If I think they had a wrong link, they joined the wrong meeting. They are now available. I'm not sure if, Chair, you'll allow them to...
Why are they joining a wrong meeting, DM and the DG? So you gave them a wrong... link. Commissioner?
I'm not sure how they are. You there, Dr. Masiapato? Dr. Masiapato, yeah. And General Chilembe?
Good morning. Good morning, Honorable Chair, and of course DM, as well as Honorable members of the committee. Yeah, indeed, we had a challenge at DM in the morning. We got a link actually for the 4 o'clock meeting, which is the one for DPW. And that's the reason why we came through to this meeting a bit late. But yeah, so thank you very much. Yeah, indeed, my name is Mike Masiapato. I'm the newly appointed commissioner of BMA. And of course, in terms of the committee, I've seen in the program that on the 23rd of November, we will be having a focused discussions around BMA, and I suppose we'll talk more about the plans and what we basically need to be doing in taking forward the work of the BMA. So thank you very much. Maybe for now we can also allow General Chilembe to also show himself up. Thanks.
Thank you and welcome, Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. The Minister and the other senior members present. I'm Major General, I'm Deputy Commissioner for Operations for BMA. I have also joined the department. I've been in the South African Police Service, being a Major General in charge of borders. So the issue of BMA would be something that I'm very much interested in. Thank you so much.
Thank you and welcome, Deputy Commissioner. Director General, you can proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Mostly, if we can fly to the presentation. I want to touch on some of the issues that the DM has already spoken to. So if we can just load the presentation from Home Affairs colleagues. So the first few slides, Chair, the outline of the presentation is as follows. We will then look at the vision, mission, and the value statement as Moses is going upwards. And then we'll look at what is the, as a reminder, the mandate of the department. And then we'll then look at the outcomes, the contribution to the MTSF priorities, and then we'll provide an overview of the organizational performance of the DHA, which the DM has done, and then performance per program, DM has done that. And then we'll reflect on some of the challenges and how we're planning to navigate around those in this current financial year, and then the strategic priorities going forward. And then the CFO will then take over and present the budget versus how we've performed in that area. And then the audit outcome has just been shared with you by the AG. What is key will be to present the audit action plan. And we've taken note of the issues that the AG and the committee has raised with regards to the audit action plan. So the next slide then is just a reminder, Chair, about our vision, mission, and the mandate statement. Our vision is clearly stated that we seek to build a South Africa where identity, status, and citizenship are key enablers of citizenship, empowerment, inclusivity, and economic development and national security. Our mission is clearly stated that we'll want to carry out this mission in line with our commitment to citizen empowerment, which will include inclusivity, economic development, and national security. And how do we do this? We plan to do this by ensuring that we are an efficient and secure, and also to secure the custodian of citizenship and civil registration. And then we also want to securely ensure that the management of international migration is done at a strategic level. And then we also want to ensure that we manage efficiently the asylum seekers and refugees. And then lastly, it's really to ensure that we efficiently determine and safeguard the official identity and status of persons. Our mandate is clearly stated, broadly divided into two categories, civic services and immigration services. First mandate is really to the management of citizenship and civil registration. The second one is the management of international migration. And the last one is really the management of refugee protection. So the next slide really just reflects on the outcomes that we have adopted as a department. I'm not going to repeat this because they more or less aligned to the last slide that I've just spoken to. If we can move to the next slide. So this is the contribution that we make to the seven MTSF APEX priorities that have been identified for the 2019 to 2024 electoral cycle. And we contribute in particular to two key priorities. This is priority number two and priority number six. However, if you were to look at our mandate, we contribute indirectly to almost all the priorities. For instance, through international migration, we do contribute to priority number seven, which seeks to ensure that we build a better Africa and the world. And we have reflected the priorities that we contribute to. Priority number two is really economic transformation and job creation. And then priority number six is social cohesion and safe communities. And then there's the cross-cutting focus, which focuses on women, youth, and people with disabilities. And then the next slide, Chair, then demonstrates how we've performed. It provides an overview of the DHA performance. This pie chart is what the DM was speaking to. In the period under review, we had 28 APP targets that were planned for the 2020-21 financial year. There's a typo there, apologies, of which we're able to attain 68%. We were able to achieve that, and then 32% not achieved, translating to about 9 of these targets. So let's then go to the next slide, which will then provide a summary of the performance per program at the end of the financial year. Administration, as DM was indicating, had 12 targets in the year under review, and they were able to achieve 9 out of the 12, translating to 75%. Three targets were not achieved, which translates to 25%. We'll indicate what is it that we're doing with regards to that. Citizen Affairs had 6 targets, as the DM has indicated, the best performer for the period under review. They were able to achieve 83% of their targets. There's one that was not achieved. We'll indicate why that was not achieved and what is it that we're doing. That translates to 17%. And then Immigration Affairs, including the BMA, that 10 targets, and then they were only able to achieve half of those, which translate to 50%. So overall, that's the picture in terms of how we've performed in the period under review. And then the next slide just demonstrate what the DM was indicating. I'm not going to repeat this slide. Whereas the next slide provides slide 10 will then indicate to you our performance over the past 6 years. 2015-16, we're at 81%, 16-17, 84, 17-18, 86, and then 18-19, 73, and then we picked up again 2019-20 to 75%. This year in particular, we've taken a knock of about 7%, and of course there are measures that we will indicate at the end of the presentation as to what is it that we're doing in order to claw back to the percentages that we're able to achieve over the past few years. If we can move to the next slide, we'll now move to the performance program. And the first one that we are looking at is program one, administration. And the contribution is really to the DHA positioned to contribute positively to a capable and developmental state. That's the outcome that we contribute to. So our annual target was to ensure that the concept document, including the development of an implementation project plan on the revised service delivery model, is approved by the DG. That was done. We were able to attain that target. Similarly, we were able to achieve the next target, which focused on the DHA access model. That was also achieved. It was presented to the DG and the minister in March. And of course, there are issues pertaining to the efficient access of DHA services that were raised by the minister, and we are attending to some of those issues that have been raised. We're able to achieve that target. And then the next slide, slide 15, speaks to the communication strategy, how we reach out or create awareness in terms of our activities, which contributes to the outcome on positioning the department to contribute positively to a capable and developmental state. We're able to achieve that target. We were 53 media engagements were conducted, 8 outreach engagements were conducted, 4 campaigns were also conducted. And of course, the reasons for overachievement are indicated there. We had to communicate a lot with regards to the COVID-19 related matters and other departmental developments. Amongst others, this will include the gazetting of the official identity management policy. And then there were calls for comments for the on the one-stop border post that were published on the various publications, including social media. And of course, we then also had to review set permits by the department, or which are issued by the department. So that target was then achieved. The next one, really, it's a target that we're not able to achieve. Not that one. Okay, let me speak to this one before we get to the next one. This target contributes to ensuring that we have a secured population register that empowers citizens, enables inclusivity, economic development, and national security. The target here, Chair, was to ensure that the official identity management policy is submitted to the minister for submission to cabinet. That was done by the 30th of March 2021 for consideration and approval. If we can move to the next one. On the DHA bill, which was supposed to have been gazetted for public consultations, again, it contributes to the same outcome on building a capable and developmental state. While this bill was approved by EXCO for submission to the minister, we further were required to source a legal opinion on the bill and also to finalize consultations with the School of Government on the establishment of the DHA College. The portfolio committee will be fairly aware that that mandate in terms of ensuring that the college is established rests with the School of Government. So we needed their concurrence on this matter. I'm happy to report that we have now finally received both the legal opinion from the state law advisors and also the School of Government on us being able to proceed forward. So this target has been moved or rolled over to the new financial year or the current financial year. So we should be able to finalize this target during the current financial year. If we can move to the next one. On the BMCS, which was supposed to be rolled out to 4 airports, the target was not achieved. The BMCS servers were supposed to have been installed and configured at a number of airports. Again, this target has been rolled over to this current financial year.
And the reasons for us not being able to perform were the various lockdown regulations that placed restrictions on travel, restrictions, and this therefore delayed us in terms of the rollout of the system to the ports of entry. If we can move to the next target, on the e-visa phase one, in particular focusing on TRV for tourists, which was supposed to be integrated with the advanced passenger processing system or the APP and the payment gateway and the central list orchestrator. This work was finalized, Chair. The APP integration was completed and is able to communicate both with the APP system and the BMCS. The next target focused on the service provider that was supposed to be contracted to develop an ASM system or asylum seeker and refugee system. In this case, Chair, this target was not achieved. The service provider was not appointed, and in our discussions with the CFO, the team
had indicated... cutting...
Chair, am I still audible? Let me terminate the video to ensure that I'm audible. Are you able to hear me, Chair? Chairperson, are you able to hear me?
We can hear you. Did we? I think it's the chairperson. He's also struggling with network, but we can hear you clearly. Yes.
All right. So I was on the service provider that was supposed to be contracted to develop the asylum seeker and refugee system. We were not able to conclude this work due to the fact that CFO and the team had indicated that the specs that had been developed had not been signed off by the people that were on the relevant committee which was supposed to finalize this. And as a result, this process was therefore terminated. But we are happy to report to the committee that the new bid spec has been finalized, and therefore this matter will be tabled before the BAC for consideration and finalization in the next few weeks. So this target again has been rolled over to the new financial year. If we can move to the next target on page 21. In this area, Chair, we were supposed to ensure that two DHA business processes were supposed to be evaluated to identify possible vulnerabilities to fraud, corruption, and security breaches. We're able to achieve this target. If we can move to the next one. 50% of reported cases on fraud and corruption finalized within 90 working days. Of course, while we've been able to achieve this target by a huge margin, about 70%, there's still a lot that needs to be done in this area, and the DDG responsible for counter-corruption and security services, the team has now developed a plan in terms of how they need to enhance this part of work through constant monitoring. And of course, there are additional effort that's being done by the investigators. If we can move to the next slide, we're also able to achieve this target 27 threat and risk assessments, or TRAs, conducted in accordance with the MIS or the MPSS, which stands for the Minimal Physical Security Standard. We're able to achieve 31 of those threat and risk assessments that were conducted. And the reasons for overachievement is that four of those were conducted because the additional resources were utilized from within the branch. If we move to program two, the DM has already spoken in terms of, I think on the vetting files, this was also achieved. We've indicated why we were able to achieve that through the discussions that we've also had with the SSA in terms of how to prioritize some of these files. We can move to the next one. The next area that we're looking at is really program two, Chair. The target here was 750 beds registered within 30 calendar days. We're able to achieve this through a number of efforts, through daily operational meetings that we conducted. We also had deployments of staff to KZN, Gauteng, and the Western Cape. And we ensured that there was constant monitoring of activities. But also, our network or hospital connectivity program was able to assist us through following regular meetings with the provincial managers and the Department of Health. And of course, at some point, we had to do overtime on Saturdays and Sundays, taking into consideration that we also, in the same period, had to do a lot of registrations that were COVID-19 related. But also we had the voluntary work on Saturdays by DHA officials, in particular through the youth forum. And then we also had the support from other levels of government, in particular COGTA, not only in KZN, COGTA in the Eastern Cape and also in the Western Cape. So we're able to achieve this target. If we can move to the next target, where we wanted to ensure the issuing of smart ID cards to citizens 16 years and above, we're able to issue more than 1.2 million smart cards to citizens 16 years and above against a target of 908,754,000. Again, there were a number of things that we did to ensure that this target was achieved. Of course, there are still challenges with regards to the system downtime, and there are other initiatives that we are undertaking to ensure that we achieve or we ensure some stability to the system, including the work that we are doing with CETA and also the engagement with various stakeholders that will include government printing works, Skynet, and also ensuring that the team that's doing this work has been increased from 50% to 100% at the moment currently. And then the next one was really on the passports. It contributes to the outcome on ensuring that we have a secure, efficient management of citizenship and civil registration to fulfill constitutional and international obligations. And we're able to ensure that in the period under review, machine-readable passports were issued within the recommended turnaround times as prescribed by the DMA regulations and the DHA APP. You will note that under level 5, this service was not being offered. Under level 4, the service was not being offered. And then under level 3, we're able to achieve 93%, level 2, 85%, and level 1, 94%. I must say, Chair, I think there have been valuable lessons of the COVID-19 pandemic. And really, this service is one that's really required by people. And I think going forward, we might need to have a rethink in terms of not offering this service at all for level 5 and level 4. We can move to the next slide, then skip this, I've spoken to that. The next target was really to ensure that we have a draft marriage policy that's gazetted for public comments. This was not achieved. The draft marriage policy was approved by the JCPS ministerial cluster on 31 March 2021 for submission to Cabinet. It was scheduled for presentation to the social, the governance, and JCP as cluster in February. However, some of those clusters, there were some rescheduling, and therefore the JCPS cluster meeting recommended that the policy must be presented to the JCPS cluster meeting before it's tabled in Cabinet. However, I need to indicate that in quarter three, we should be able to finalize the submissions to all those clusters that we have referred to, in particular JCPS and the social cluster. So we can move to the next one. The next target, Chair, was on citizenship discussion paper, which was supposed to be submitted to the Minister for approval. I'm happy to report that in the period under review, this target was achieved. The citizenship discussion document was submitted to the Minister for approval. And the next target focused on the civil registration discussion paper, which was also submitted to the Minister for approval. We've also attained that target. The next target are for program three on immigration affairs. And this is an area that we've indicated we have not achieved quite a lot of those targets. So the first one was really to ensure that there were 200 law enforcement operations or inspections conducted. This we do to ensure that there's compliance with immigration and departmental legislation. We're able to overachieve that target by ensuring that there were 288 law enforcement operations that were conducted. this portfolio committee also visited us, where our teams that were at the borderline posted, in particular in Quarter 4, and this then allowed for increased number of operations. So we hope that going forward, we should be able to continue these inspections and joint operations with other law enforcement operations or agencies. If we can move to the next slide, the DM has already indicated that these are some of the targets that we're not able to achieve because some of these services were not offered during various lockdown levels. And this is one of them, the on permanent residence applications. I need to indicate to the committee that this target has now been rolled over to the new financial year. And the reasons I indicated why we're not able to achieve, clearly because there was no population for permanent resident applications to be adjudicated. I need to indicate to the committee that we will be resuming with this service in the next few weeks. We've already set up a team that has cleared the backlog for the first level of adjudication. They're now assisting with the second level of adjudication. This then will enable us to ensure that we open up for these services. If we can move to the next one. The next target on slide 36, we're able to achieve this one on 82% of critical skills visas adjudicated within 4 weeks. And I think despite some of the challenges that we experienced where the workplace had to shut down due to COVID-19 infections, we're able to attain 91.1%. If we can move to the next slide on page 37, we're not able to achieve this target, Chair. On 90% of business and general work visas adjudicated within 8 weeks, we're only able to attain 83.3%. Again, we had to ensure that we observe COVID-19 health and safety requirements by introducing social distancing in the workplace, which necessitated officials to work on a rotational basis. We are working hard. We've put in place measures to address the backlog that is in this area in particular. If we can move to the next slide. On the refugee protection policy document submitted to the Minister for approval, this was also achieved in March 2021. If we can move to the next one. On the international migration policy discussion document submitted to the Minister for approval, that was also done in March 2021. I think it's important for the committee to note that for this financial year in particular, the three have now been merged, which will include the work that we've done on the green paper, which focuses on citizenship, international migration, and also refugee protection. The next slide then speaks to the matters related to the BMA, where we were not able to roll out the BMA incrementally to the four ports of entry, to the five segments of the borderline, and one community crossing point. Of course, the reasons that are indicated, amongst others, will include the delays in terms of the Act being finalized, but we are happy that the Deputy Commissioner and the Commissioner have now been finally appointed to take forward this work. I suppose when they appear before the committee, they will be able to indicate how they are clawing back to ensure that we achieve some of the activities that are listed under the annual targets in this current financial year. This target, of course, remains under the current financial year. The next one focuses on the National Targeting Center. If we can move to slide 42. This target was also not achieved. However, I think it's important for the committee to note the progress that we've made with regards to that. An NTC or National Targeting Center Establishment Plan was approved then in 2020. And then we also had a request for the nomination of NTC steering committee members, which were sent to relevant organs of state. To date, we have not received much feedback from those government departments. We are continuing to liaise with them. And then a technical committee has been set up to track some of these activities. And then this target, Chair, I need to indicate that it's one of those that's been rolled over as well to the 2021-22 financial year. The NTC, incrementally established, commencing, of course, with the establishment of an interim National Targeting Center. The next target speaks to the multiple preferred bidders appointed for the redevelopment of the 6 land ports of entry. Again, this target could not be achieved, as we needed to address a lot of outstanding information required for the finalization of the draft request for proposals. This matter is being attended to, but we can also report some progress that we've made with regards to that. Amongst others, it would include the appointment of a transaction advisor, including the project officer, to take forward this work. We hope we should be able to send out an RFP to the market before the end of the year, subject to approval by National Treasury and the relevant other government departments that have an interest in this matter. If we can move to the next one, on the one-stop border post OSBP policy that was gazetted for public comment, this was achieved. It was gazetted in 2020 for public comments. So, Chair, the next slides, 46, 47, 48, up to 50, deal with targets that were not achieved. And I think I've spoken extensively in terms of what is it that we are doing with regards to that. I'll then hand over for slide from slide 51 up to the up to slide 55 or 56 to the CFO to deal with the financial information, and then I'll come back to conclude the presentation with regards to the challenges and the priorities moving forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. You can proceed.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, colleagues, thank you and good morning for this opportunity. Chairperson, I plan to present to the committee the 2020 annual financial statements as well as the draft audit action plan for 2021-22. If I may then start on slide 52 with the budget versus expenditure outcome. Chairperson, you'll notice from this slide that the department did not spend its full allocation. We spent 96.4% of our budget allocation at the end of the financial year. We had two areas of underspending, Chair. The first was on compensation of employees, where we had a 63 million rand underspent. Chairperson, that underspending was caused by the late implementation of the wage agreements. The wage agreements were only implemented in the current financial year. The second one, Chairperson, is on goods and services, which is a 263 million rands underspent. Chairperson, that one I perhaps need to explain a little bit more. It was caused by our under-collection of revenue. If you look at the bottom part of this table, you'll see that we projected as self-financing to be collected or revenue to be collected, a 621 million rands. We only collected 370 million rands, Chair. The shortfall, therefore, was 251 million. Our underspending, including self-financing, is 317 mil, as per the slide on top. So, Chairperson, we are only allowed to spend self-financing if we collect the revenue. Given that last year was an unusual year, Chairperson, and that we were not able to offer our full service offerings and generate the revenue we usually generate, our revenue collections fell short. And as a consequence, we had to curtail our self-financing expenditure as well. Chairperson, I'm then going to move on to slide 53 and start dealing with the audit outcome. Chairperson, the AG has already reported that we have an unqualified audit report with findings. It's the fifth unqualified audit opinion in a row. Chairperson, an important issue is that the audit was only finalized on the 10th of September. The material findings were already highlighted by the AG. I will just summarize them, Chairperson. It's material misstatements in the annual financial statements, subsequently corrected by management. There were also material misstatements in the annual performance report, subsequently corrected by management. And then the non-compliance is linked to the material misstatements in the financial statements and the issue about revenue management, where we are not taking effective steps to recover fines and penalties. The other issue, Chairperson, is the status of our IT environment where intervention is required. Chairperson, from assurance provider perspective, only the audit committee provides the necessary assurance, so only the audit committee was called green. If I can then go to the next slide, Chair, the department is a going concern, and I believe we are still a going concern. Our financial health has improved, but there are still some issues, Chairperson. The first is obviously the issue about revenue management, not collecting money due to the department timelessly, and then cash management. The claims against the department are too high. We still sit with contingent liabilities as at the end of 31st March 2021 of over 2 billion rands. The contingent liabilities have subsequently came down, Chair, because we had judgments in the New Dawn matter as well as the Double Ring matter. Chairperson, our fruitless and wasteful expenditure has increased from 21,000 to 557,000 for the reasons the AG explained very nicely early on, and to which Minister, to which Deputy Minister has, and DG has already responded. Our irregular expenditures, Chairperson, reduced over the 2 years from 284 mil to 7.7. In that 7.7 is the ABUS money as ABUS irregular expenditure, as well as the irregular expenditure in respect of cleaning services, Chair, which comes from prior years. Our supply chain compliance has improved. There were no material findings listed. So, Chairperson, I'm now going to get into the draft audit action plan. Chairperson, the draft audit action plan was prepared and is available. So it's an Excel document. It's a rather elaborate document. It was submitted to internal audit on the 29th of October for a validation process, Chair, to make sure that the actions proposed will address the AG audit findings. This is to deal with the issue, Chairperson, that our audit action plan is seen as not being effective in dealing with the issues raised by the AG. So if the internal audit then provides us with a report that then says to us the action plan meets the SMART criteria and will work. Chairperson, the draft was presented to EXCO already, but because it's still a draft, it will have to come back to EXCO after the internal audit process is concluded, and then it will go to the audit committee as well. Chairperson, I've seen a message from DG where he asked for a special EXCO on Thursday to discuss the draft audit action plan. So it's Thursday this week. Chairperson, this plan is monitored at our back to basic meetings. We also meet with the AG on a weekly or sometimes bi-weekly meeting, depending on where we are in the audit process. The plan is presented, the reports, this is now progress against the audit action plan, reports are presented to EXCO, our departmental management committee, our ministerial management committee, and the audit committee, as well as the risk committee, Chair. So Chairperson, I believe there's adequate monitoring of the plan at various levels. Clearly, we will also bring this plan to the portfolio committee for the portfolio committee to guide us on how we can improve in delivering on the audit action plan. Chairperson, a critical difference we are bringing in or a change is that the failure to implement the actions or to provide progress reports result in consequence management. So we have had issues in the past, Chair, that we have a beautiful plan, the timelines, the timeframes come and go, and people are not held accountable. So we have changed that in the last financial year already, Chair, and I believe it is bearing fruit. If I can then move to the next slide, Chair, so that you can just get an indication as to what the draft audit action plan consists of. This is the summary sheet, Chair. You'll see from the sheet that there are 130 audit actions. They are allocated to a person responsible. There are due dates. We monitor completion, in progress, future dates, not started and overdue, and no response. So, Chairperson, it's not good to have anything in the not started and overdue or in the no response column, because that then leads to consequence management. Chairperson, I perhaps just need to spend a little bit more time on this action plan as well. After the audit process, after the audit was concluded, we met with the AG to do a debriefing session. We also did some introspection and self-reflection and ask ourselves why is it that we are stagnating at unqualified audit opinion? What prevents us from moving into a green, into the green fields or into a clean audit? So Chairperson, so I think the reality is that if we continue to do what we have done in the past, we should not expect different results, and that's why we're doing things differently this financial year. The Audit Action Plan is a living document, Chair, and it will change as and when new issues are raised or other issues are raised which we need to address. So we cannot keep this plan static and should deal with it, Chairperson, with the issues raised prior to them happening. And in that regard, Chairperson, we have also decided to not only focus on the AG findings, but to include in our Audit Action Plan reporting frameworks the findings by our own internal audit unit. So in the past, I must admit that, Chair, that we neglected internal audit and gave preference to the AG findings. But I believe we should treat both of these assurance providers with the same respect and give them due attention, Chair. So that's one difference. Chairperson, the Audit Action Plan is being projectized. That's another change from prior years. So we are treating this as an audit, as a project, and not only as a plan. A project can be better managed and better controlled, Chair. Chairperson, another difference is that we have adopted a whole of department approach, unlike in the past where this plan was seen as the CFO's audit action plan and his responsibility only. If we treat this as a departmental plan and not as a finance plan, Chair, we hope to get better buy-in and assurances that everybody will work towards getting this clean audit. Chairperson, I've already spoken about consequence management for the failure to provide input or not meeting the deadlines or implementing the audit action plan. That process we have already started, Chair. So the DG has signed the letters and the warning letters that followed, Chair. So we and perhaps I should also add this, as the AG pointed out, Chair, we follow due process. The processes require us to give people an opportunity to provide reasons as to why they should not be charged. Once they have provided the reasons are considered. Depending on the reasons or the explanations provided, a progressive discipline regime is followed. So for irregular expenditure, for the financial misconduct issues, those will entail formal disciplinary hearings, Chair. Where officials willfully or negligently act or cause such irregular expenditure or fruitless or wasteful expenditure. Chairperson, there was also the issue raised of training. So we have scheduled training on the modified cash standards in conjunction with National Treasury as well as the Office of Accountant General. We also have DG has kindly agreed that we can appoint a resource to assist us with independent third-party review of our financials. Chairperson, we did do that in the last financial year, and I believe that led to an improvement in the oversight over the financials. Pressure is still an issue, Chair, so if you have to change too many things in your last day, you are bound to make mistakes. On the revenue policy, the issue about collecting fines and penalty, Chairs, I expect that policy, I expect to receive that draft policy by the end of November this year. There are also ministerial interventions regarding the DIRCO receivable. Chairperson, following correspondence between the Minister and the Minister of Finance and the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, National Treasury has decided to appoint a committee to investigate the shortfall on the revenue collected at DIRCO. So Chairperson, that is the investigation at DIRCO. I believe that investigation has started. I'm not privy to the outcome of the investigation, but I believe they are not done yet, Chair. Then Chairperson, the last thing is investigations, and that was also an issue raised by Mr. Rabondo and the AG team. We need to finalize our investigations quicker and deal with all matters of fruitless, irregular losses in the year in which it occurs, Chair, so that we can get to deal with the past as well. So we are, as a loss control committee, Chairperson, we have loss controls in the provinces as well as at head office. The loss control processes are well underway, so we should be able to finalize all investigations regarding fruitless, irregular, and losses before December, Chair. That was the plan which we are working towards. Chairperson, I believe I've come to the, my next slide, Chair, is just actions to improve the audit outcome. If I can just ask that we move to slide 57. Chairperson, we have an audit action plan. We have had audit action plans. What we need to do now is implement the audit action plan in spirit as well as to the letter. We must drive this clean audit process. DG is assisting us in that process. So and the monitoring at all various levels, Chairperson, will also help. The drive of a culture of compliance and accountability, Chairperson, that is already, I would like to say it's already there, Chair, and I can see some differences. We are applying consequence management where it's necessary and warranted, Chair. And I believe, Chairperson, that the clean audit outcome is within our control and can be achieved, Chair. So it's not something that's impossible to achieve in Home Affairs. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, CFO. DG?
No, thanks. Thanks, CFO. So I'll then look at some of the challenges and priorities moving forward. Chair, the DM, as indicated, has lost connectivity. I hope you'll be able to rejoin if he manages to find connectivity again. So the first challenge that we would like to highlight that the committee is familiar with, it's really this challenge around long queues that we continue to experience in some of our offices. And there are a number of interventions that we are working on. For example, if you were to look at Honorable Mgcine's, the areas in the Eastern Cape, Matatiele in particular, where we currently don't have an office and operate from the Department of Justice. It's just a very small office that has been allocated to us. We've had interactions with the municipality in that area to the extent that they are providing us, they've agreed, council has agreed to provide us with a building that we will be renovating and move our entire office to this specific office through that partnership that we will have with the municipality. And secondly, there's an area that that's underway, and TDG Maposo will speak about the appointment system that we're about to introduce in selected offices to deal with the long queues. And then we also spoke about the expansion of our footprint, including the malls. We've had an engagement with two of some of the leading banks that have already signaled an indication that they should be able to come on board, but also to assist us working with CETA and the IT team with regards to the unstable systems, both the networks and the applications. So there's work that's underway to address some of these challenges. And then, of course, we're addressing the issue around an integration of IT system, not only across the DHA, but also government as a whole, where you then experience this challenge of running dual systems, which add in terms of the expenditure of your finances, because some of the systems are actually quite aging systems that require much more support. And then on the high vacancy rate, on unfunded vacancies in frontline offices and in certain critical posts at a management level, we are, Chair, filling most of the vacant positions. I think this week, again, on IT, following the appointment of the CIO, we should be able to fill some of the chief directorate positions, including those at the director level. However, further than this, we've then sought assistance from the private sector to come and assist us in some of these areas, in particular around IT specifically. We have also submitted a business case to National Treasury. I think CFO has reminded us this morning that Treasury has indicated they've received the business case. It will be reviewed as part of the MTEC process by National Treasury so that we then deal with the issue around the high vacancy rate. And then the issue that we've always highlighted is this huge dependency on other organs of state to deliver services. whether it is CETA or DPWNI and SARS. I think on CETA, we are having continuous engagements with CETA. We're looking at what is it that we can do, including with the private sector, specifically to look at the IT infrastructure. And then we're also looking at working with the Solicitor General's Office around the litigation against the department. They've indicated they'll be setting up a project office just to assist us to deal with the litigation. However, it has not stopped us from pursuing some of these matters in court. The committee will be familiar with a case that we had, Seth, who spoke about it, where a litigant was demanding $600 million. We've won that case. The litigant has now continued to proceed to the Constitutional Court, despite the judges indicating that there are no prospects of success at any of the courts. So we are attending to those matters. And then the DHA service delivery model, as we do know, it's labor intensive. Therefore, in most instances, as we move through various levels of this pandemic, there will always be an impact in terms of our offices. But I think there are valuable lessons that we've learned, and we have now learned to manage some of the activities and how to continue to offer services despite the pandemic, in particular because of the vaccination program by government as well. Now, in terms of our priorities moving forward, the DHA key priorities that we'd like to highlight to the committee, amongst others, will include the rollout of the Border Management Authority. I think the two commissioners will, with the minister at some point, come and brief, I think it's this month, the committee on the activities and also the plans that have been planned for the festive period in terms of dealing with congestion, not only at Bight Bridge, but including Lebombo and also Groblers Brug, following interactions not only with other government departments, but also working with the private sector. And then we're also looking at the phased implementation of the repositioning program. To this extent, we have appointed a service provider that's already on board working on this work. And then, of course, we'll want to continue the modernization program, including dealing with the war on queues, a task team that's been established to deal with some of these long queues. And then our work continues on the establishment of the national identity system, including the implementation of the e-visa system. But we'll want to ensure, as the CFO was indicating, the optimal utilization of both our financial and human resources, including the filling of vacant funded critical posts. We've indicated that we've submitted that business case to Treasury for capacitation. And then we'll want to continue to ensure that we issue early birth, we conduct early birth registration and the issuance of smart ID cards and the issuance of critical skills and business visas. We have been engaging with a lot of business organizations through our directorate or corporate directorate, where various businesses have been asking for particular visas where we've been able to assist. And then we've started this work on the comprehensive review of the citizenship, international migration and refugee protection legislation. And then we've spoken about the need to ensure that we finalize the RFQ for the upgrading of the 6 priority land ports, and then the enlargement of the DHA footprint, including partnerships with third party providers. I think we've briefed the committee previously about our partnership with a number of organizations, including our expansion to the malls. We've now received draft contracts that are now under review. Once that's concluded and through the approval that we will require from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure and National Treasury, we should be able to expand our footprints. And of course, there's a need to ensure that we capacitate our IS branch. I need to indicate that this issue around IT, it's a matter that worrying across government as a whole. You will note that 92% of government and entities of government have weak IT control environments, which is a matter that's of concern. And further than that, you will also know that 81%, and this is information that's contained in the AG report, not for the Home Affairs, but broadly, all government departments. You have 81% of government departments that have IT or weak IT security controls, and also weak disaster recovery controls, which is what the CEO of GPW where will speak to some of these issues at some point. And then, of course, the weak IT governance practices. So these are matters that we are seized with. These are matters that we are attending to so that we're able to reposition and modernize programs of the department. So most of these priorities are therefore included in the 2021-22 APP and the annual operational plan of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much, CFO. DG, is all your presentation done?
Yes, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to invite members to interact with the reports, the presentations. I will invite Deputy Minister is challenged with the network. I'm not sure he's back. Honorable Kanyile, the same problem. And Honorable Lokwase, the same challenge. I'm not sure whether they are back. I will start with Honorable Molekwa. Invite Honorable Ruos, invite Honorable Mkwini, invite Honorable Pile, and Honorable Modise Mza. Members or those have indicated that they have a challenge of network, they will indicate if they will be able to contribute. But for now, let's move in that order. Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start also by appreciating the presentation by the department and the proposal, especially on the last slide of the presentation on moving forward. Chairperson, I just want to also congratulate the department for receiving the unqualified report for consecutive years, but also encourage the department to be able to develop internal controls that are realistic to be able to keep any irregular act, and also to monitor the plan of action to be able to deal with the finding of the AG, because if you remember, on the presentation of the AG, it raised many issues, especially on the issue of the internal control that are not able to take any issues that are irregular from the department. So I just want to encourage them to make sure that they stick to the internal control that will be able to deal with especially irregular expenditure and develop a plan of action that is realistic to deal with the findings from the AG, so that in future we must be able to receive a clean audit without any findings. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, your contribution, Honorable Molekwa. Honorable Mkwini. Honorable Ross, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. I'm okay to be number two, it's fine. Now, first of all, Chair, I would just like to really thank the Department of Home Affairs for being so responsive over the election weekend. There were a few complaints about offices being closed, etc., and really Home Affairs responded very, very quickly. And so from the DA side, I would just like to congratulate Home Affairs on their responsiveness over the election day to ensure that that people could get their temporary ID certificates. Chairperson, you know, I think it's good to hear that the consequence management is being put into place, and Mr. Hollenby seems to be very positive about that. I think, Chair, perhaps we can get these audit action plan reports on a more regular basis than we previously had to make sure that that actually happens, whether it's on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis, even if we receive it to satisfy ourselves that this new action plan and this new level of consequence management is actually happening. Chair, in terms of the priorities going forward, I think the war on queues, we've had a task team, I think it was since 2019. There seems to always be a task team. And my question is, in that financial year, in the financial year under consideration, what did that task team achieve? What did they actually do? Does that task team have a terms of reference? I would just like to understand this, because we keep hearing about this task team and it's very vague, and we don't see any deliverables where we can say this task team achieved such and such. So I'd just like a bit of a clarity on that. Then in terms of the access model, I'd like to once again request that we as committee members receive this access model now that it's been approved, because it's very important, Chairperson, for our oversight. And I can give you a case in point is the situation at Sosungube, at NAFCOC Home Affairs, where it's the only Home Affairs that issues smart IDs across Sosungube, Hammanskraal, Mabopane, and people come from as far as Moretele in the Northwest Province. So it's got it serves this catchment area because the offices around it don't provide the smart ID. And so as much as we can say the war on queues, we can look at the technology, we can get that in place. But I think it's really important that we as members also understand this access model so that we can see where there's potential gaps that we can highlight. Because in this scenario, you have one Home Affairs office that is handling close to 1 million people, as far as I can understand. And that's clearly not going to work. In terms of the early birth registration, issuing of smart card IDs, I would just like to understand what the progress is on having the Home Affairs office at all clinics and health facilities that have birth facilities. That was promised in 2019. I would just like to get an update on where we are with that. And then welcome to the Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner Operations of the BMA. A question I have on this, and just for clarity, is whether the Section 97 Presidential Proclamation has been signed to transfer the relevant border law enforcement functions to the Minister of Home Affairs. If I can just get confirmation on that. Then the second last question is on the goods and services. So there was an explanation of the 263 million that was underspent. But maybe I'm misunderstanding it, but I'm pretty sure that during that financial year, we had a special adjustment budget, which reduced the budget by 562 million. And the passenger name recognition system and the disaster recovery plan were deferred to another financial year. So was this under collection that Mr. Hollenby is talking about, was that on the revised collection forecast as per the special adjustment, or was it on the original budget? And then the final question is really on this revenue collection problem. And it seems to be a recurring theme through the AG, for the DHA and its entities. The problem with collecting revenue, what is actually being done about this to solve this problem? Because it seems to be recurring over years and years. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, your contribution, Honorable Mkwene. Okay, I think there's a problem with the network, Honorable Pile.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, mine is just to say that during the period of local government elections, I think firsthand we've seen some of the challenges that we may have been experiencing at Home Affairs. And again, I must also say that, and I must applaud the department in terms of how they addressed it. But for me, I think there's just two things, well, a few things. The first one is about the uncollected IDs. If there's, I'm sure it was not part of that, but at some point, if we can get an indication as to where we are with that, particularly because I think a bulk of IDs would have went out, and perhaps there needs to be maybe an evaluation of that or give us some kind of analysis or statistics. The second one is in regard to smart offices. I have to say, Chair, that in this day and age, with our democracy, we still can't have offices that, there's still this gap and disparity in that we have many offices
in areas where there are smart offices, and then you have a bulk of our areas that still don't have it. So I want to also suggest that perhaps we need a list of offices that are still not offering these services, and then put a time frame to that in terms of how we're going to achieve getting all our offices to become smart offices. You know, the thing for me that stands out is that our people are asking for a simple thing, and that is to get an ID document. And this links to many services, because without an ID, you know, you can't have other social services like grants. Even now when people are being vaccinated, you know, you require an ID number. So it's important that, and you also need to take your ID to a vaccination site. So I think it's important that we are able to achieve that that goal of ensuring that every citizen has access to being able to get an ID document. So if we can just, you know, work on that. And then the last one is to improve on our WARN queues. I know we have implemented, and we've also rolled out different initiatives, but I still think that we have to be able to do some more to be able to achieve this WARN queues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Play, for your contribution. Honorable Modisemta.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I think for me, one would want to say that the department is performing fairly well, considering the kind of services that it is expected to provide and the demands thereof, particularly around the civil the services that they provide to the citizens of South Africa. We know the difficulties that the lockdown level restrictions would have posed and how it would have impacted negatively on providing the services across the country. But what of interest that I would want to ask is that despite having the lock level adjusted in the past a few months, the performance targets would have dropped by a percentage of around 7 or 8, if I'm not mistaken. The performance would have reduced compared to the previous financial year, 1920, where would have the year 20, particularly where would have been on hard lock levels. It may seem that in the year 2021 as well, the performance would have went down. What could have been identified as the challenges or difficulties that would have made such negative performances? Secondly, Chair, on the sixth upgrading of land border post, we note the reasons that were indicated by the DG that would have caused the delays. But what I want to know is that does the department have specific target frames on when would those upgradings see or find a progress around them? So we would not want to leave it as they would have said, but at least give us time frames on when could we start seeing the progress. And may we also need to have a follow-up on the have a progress report from time to time with regarding to those border posts. We are all aware that the issue of land ports are a challenge. Even now during the past 2 months, we would have seen how that has impacted negatively, particularly around the movements of trucks in those border posts. So the sooner we see progress on the upgrading of posts, the better. On the uncollected IDs, I just want to find out from the department that outside of the SMSs that they send to citizens who have applied for these IDs, is there any other program that can be put forward in making sure that these we get rid of the backlog of the IDs that are seated there in the offices? Is there a way that we can, in our budget, can develop a program of probably can even recruit temporary brigades that enforce certain focused areas where there's high volumes of these uncollected IDs and have them being sent to address certain addresses, or even directly take them to the homes of these individuals. It is worrying that such an important document that citizens really require to in their lives would find that they are stagnant and are seated there in the department, and you wonder why is it that they are not being collected. But I feel that there's an effort, we can put more effort in making sure that we really deal with this issue. I'm quite comfortable with the civil registrations that have been indicated and have been achieved, particularly around also the issuing of passports. You are quite moving smoothly, and it is really satisfying. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mutise. Is there any other member who want to make comment? If you are back, Honorable Lukwase, Honorable Tswako, they are not here. Okay. I think those are the comments and questions that the DG and the DM and the DG you will interface with and the CFO. Noting that the issues which the AG has raised, particularly on your financial status. I've observed areas of your action plan. There are two issues which I think perhaps the DG may need to input more. There's a high which impact negatively in their governance, particularly also on the financial areas.
Hello, Chair. Can you still hear us? Hello, Chair.
Yes, DG, you can take responses from the comments. Thank you.
Okay, you had disappeared. I'm not sure if I was the only one struggling to hear you on the.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I was struggling with the network. I was rising on the AG comments around the non-compliance of legislation and the consequence management on recurring issues that the department could not enforce, particularly the CFO. I'm trying to get into his plan forward to the issues that are recurring, which are sitting directly on his portfolio of authority. What are the areas of corrective measures the DG will exert on that unit. Thank you, DG and the CFO.
No, thanks, Chair. And thank you to the honorable members for the questions. I think Honorable Ruos, on consequence management, I think CFO has already indicated what is it that we've been doing with regards to this area in particular. There are findings that were made in the prior years and no action has been taken. So we're working on that. As the CFO has indicated, we have dispersed those letters and all those issues that were identified. I suppose, Honorable Ross, on consequence management, what we can assure you is that we won't bend with the breeze. We'll follow up